Good evening, everyone. It's 7 o'clock, it's Wednesday night, and we're in the midst of the invocation of presence by E.J. Gold. Not only are we in the midst of the invocation of presence, we're also in the midst of reading E.J.'s book called The Invocation of Presence. And it's quite an adventure to go back into this. In a certain way, this book is how can I say it, Ivan? It's fundamental to his teaching. It's one of the cornerstones of his entire process that he puts out there. And it's, you can't say that there's anything more important or less important than another, but in this case, this one is very, very critical. Because everything that he works with from the American Book of the Dead, the reader should be able to invoke their presence when they're beginning the process of reading.
Right.
They should be able to, their machine should be able to disappear. And the method of doing that is through the invocation of presence and this particular set of exercises. Judy, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Good evening. Good to hear your voice. Thank you for making the time, because I know you're heading out tomorrow.
Yeah, well, I'll be packing at 2 in the morning. What can I tell you?
Yeah, but I often get emails from you at 2 in the morning.
I know. I'm not normal.
Well, we had a whole meeting about that earlier. Okay.
But going back to what you were saying, David, yeah, I would say another way of saying that is that this practice of the invocation of presence is one of the real foundations, you know, of practice that E.J. recommends.
Yeah.
I think it's very basic.
What I'd like to do is I'd like to start us off back on something that we did cover last week, okay? And that was, we're on page 4. We're on the right-hand column near the bottom in the paragraph that starts, man is educated. Do you see that? Do you have that? Do you have a book there? Yeah, okay. Okay, man is educated. And Ivan, do you want to
read the paragraph?
Please, read that paragraph.
Man is educated to fall into his outer world just as he falls into a cinema screen. He learns to forget his presence and to become whatever he sees in front of him, allowing his involuntary self to take the place of his invoked presence whenever he becomes engrossed in some reverie or activity. Unless something accidentally happens, his presence to be momentarily present in the present.
So look what he says here. He learns to presence and to become whatever he sees in front of him. It doesn't say that he notices what's in front of him. He becomes what's in front of him. This is the best definition of identification that I can think of. You literally become that thing. And the first sentence of that paragraph says, we're trained, Ivan. We're trained into that.
Educated. Man is educated
we're
to fall.
Educated
into.
To fall into that.
Yeah.
And you know what? It makes sense to do that. Because we try to survive. We want to survive. We don't want to get eaten up and stuff like that. So we're educated to protect ourselves, but then all of our attention goes outside of ourselves. So that's the starting point. Now, so in that situation, so I'm going to go ahead and read the next paragraph. Such a man has not even the smallest presence when he dies. He has made no being with the possibility of continuation. And then there's a diagram on the next page. He has made no being. The corollary of that is that if you do this kind of work, you are making being. You know, we read the literature and always think that these ideas are so impossible to get to, you know. Being, oh my God, or I'm going to make a soul. Oh, geez, that's such a big idea that I could never know what that is. And yet EJ has given us a pathway that is, as I used this phrase before, it's too simple for the human mind. Okay? It's so simple. He has made it so simple that we can actually find a methodology to create being. What do you think about that, Judy?
Well, I don't think it's so simple, but there is a methodology. But it's not only to defend ourselves, it's because we fall into this cinema screen because we're conditioned from the moment we come out of the womb. Our thinking, our belief systems, everything, so that we don't really see. And the methodology that he's giving us, the corollary to that is that it will destroy that illusion that we live in. I think that's very important. And this, what he talks about here is these accidents, things happen. In other words, we have to be shocked out of it. There's a shock that happens. And this is important to keep in mind because, as you said, when we get to looking at the triangle, something happens that you know gets us off this crazy track of dreamland that we're in. So that's what I think. Do I think it's not easy at all?
Not easy, but it's something that we can and we are able to do. It is something.
And others have done it.
And others have done it. We can see evidence around us that different people, our fellow workers, were surprised from time to time that you can see these bits of being. Pat couldn't be with us tonight. She wasn't quite feeling well. But here's an individual, when she starts to get into the reading space of the ABV, that's what we recognize, you know? We recognize that there is actual being there.
Mm-hmm.
It's an objective observation that we get from a vibratory sensation that we pick up. Okay. Then, you know, right at the very top of that same column, he says, we must invoke our presence many thousands of times. And he's going to discuss that. And then there on the next, very next page, 5, you see the diagram. Ordinary man is just stuck in it. Conscious man has a difference. There's something different. So this idea that there's a two-sided idea. One is that we don't want to be stuck in the outer. But the other one is also it's an incentive. It's an incentive system. It says that if you do this, you can begin to create being. That's pretty cool, isn't it? I mean,
Dave,
it's not
you know,
go ahead.
This conscious man diagram.
Yeah.
This reminds me of a couple of weeks when somebody in the group said, I'm here. And this is what it is. Here I am now. How often do we realize that or bring it to cognition. I'm here.
I am.
And the miracle of that, you know, just
and very well
around.
The miracle of that. And so that's our effort. We now, in this chapter one, we've been told that we can do it, that we've had accidents where we wind up doing it, and then he starts to lay out the exact methodology of doing it. And then we have to practice it over and over and over again. And then going on to page 6 then, he says, we can use this idea to help us remember to invoke our presence into the present. Just that very simple thing that Judy just said, you know, I'm here. recall that I am here when he was talking about driving in the car, remember in the introductions, in that little story? He goes, the unusual thing is, remember that you're part of this environment. Right now, remember the fact that right now you might be watching on the computer or there are a few of us here in this room. Have the consciousness that you are part of this particular environment. Doesn't that change your head just a little bit? Like right there, like you might be watching on a computer there, Harry and Judy, and listening through the phone, but remember, you're part of that particular environment, or people that are on the line, watching online. You're part of that environment.
And one way that I do that, Dave, you know, and this thing with the car is really interesting,
yeah,
is we think we're driving a car, right? So we turn on the ignition while we're in the car and it's going along. What I do is I get rid of that idea that I'm driving the car, and I realize the incredible thing that this thing that I'm in is taking me all over the place and part of everything that's around me, and this thing is like taking me through my world.
Taking
it's a completely different experience.
Taking you through it. You don't lose yourself in it, but remain present as you're doing it.
And I'm not doer. I'm not the doer. I'm letting the car take me around.
Are you an Uber? Are you taking an Uber trip in Pittsburgh?
That was great. That was great.
I couldn't resist it. I watched that this afternoon. I was shocked.
Oh, that's funny. Well, I'm just telling you, try this when you're in your car, of that this thing is like taking you all over the place, and it brings you in a very, very interesting state.
Yep.
Each of us, this part of the path, this part of it, and we're going to see this in just a few paragraphs here. We are on our own. We have to do this work. This is not something, nobody can do it for you. Nobody can do it. But you can do it. But nobody can do it for you. No matter what you're part of, what group you're part of, what political party you're part of, none of that does it for you. What does it for you are these efforts individually that you make. And when we make those efforts, as small as they may be, we're rewarded back. We're rewarded back, and we make a small deposit in the essence bank at that moment. Ding.
Yes. Dave, there's something else very important, I think, to add here, and that is why the group is so important. And that is that we can be deluded. I mean, Gurdjieff said we can't see ourselves. You know, we can't see these psychological flaws necessarily. And when you're in a group, other people provide a mirror for you. So it's not just making the effort. It's also being willing to be exposed in a way, to surrender to the group and not posture in a group.
We have to take our show on the road.
Exactly.
I'd like to add something to what Judy just said, if I might.
Please, Harry.
You know, you mentioned earlier that these kinds of moments where all three forces are present, that can happen by accident, and sometimes they're in our environment. Other times we learn how to make efforts, like the text teaches us how to do, and other books that EJ has teaches us how to do.
Yeah.
But basically our first experiences just happen, and we're just the recipient of good fortune, or something happens in our environment because of things that we're doing, and we wake up. I was raised in South Texas on a ranch where everybody goes hunting, and people shoot creatures like deer regularly. It's basically part of the lifestyle and the economic base of South Texas. And I've asked some of my fellow hunters back when I did this, because I must confess I've done it many times, why do you do this? You shoot these creatures. And the overwhelming answer I've been getting is that they feel alive when they do this. They remember every time they've had an event like that occur, they remember it with such clarity that it stands out in their rather plebeian life, and it's something that they can remember and recall with great lucidity. And I thought, well, it's just a way to wake up. And EJ, in this text that we're reading now, starts off by talking about riding in a car with a little danger involved.
Yeah.
In fact, maybe a lot of danger. And it suddenly woke everybody up, and he even asked, well, did you have a moment of awareness? And God forbid that should occur.
Well, you know,
so the danger element, I think, like Judy was saying, exposing yourself, being vulnerable, I think that is part of the danger of doing it in a group, just like the danger when you're out there. Who wants to really kill an animal? But if you're hungry enough, you'll do it.
Yeah.
So these are moments that you don't forget.
Thing, you know, think about power. You know, that's a big rush that makes you feel alive. You know, killing.
I guess so.
Killing.
And power could do it.
Mm-hmm.
Hunters are not like killers, in my experience. Most of them, as they get older, like myself, have no desire to go hunting anymore. We have the desire to have deer sanctuaries and feed
do
things.
Do you take the antlers off the wall?
Yes, you do.
Yes. It's something different.
That is well said. Yes, you do.
Okay, good. I'm going to come down to Texas one of these days and check on you, Harry.
Well, you can come in and check my house. You can't check my attic of my garage,
however. Oh, okay.
Is that as we work in the path, we find other methods of getting that kind of clarity that
right.
is external in that way, and we can bring it internal. And that's where we can use a phrase like, I wish this to be used for the invocation of the presence of my present into the present. And that's the mantra, in a sense, that's behind what Judy was saying when the car is taking her in this manner. But the experience and the gift we have of existence, here's the opportunity that we have before us, Ivan. We can create being. Wow, that's pretty cool. We can actually do that because we asked at the very, very beginning, what can you do that's actually will be around in 50,000 years? That's what can be around. A little droplet of the eternality that is created because of the work that we do on a moment-by-moment basis. And we have a little, like, you know, when you see something like a little bug encased in amber, ancient amber, right? Been there for 10,000 years, and there it is. So we're creating these crystalline moments of amber that will last and last and last.
There's a price to pay, though.
It's worth the pay. Isn't it worth the stretch?
Yeah, but you got to think of, are you willing to pay?
Is it worth the stretch? Are you willing to write that paycheck? I am.
The people who find this, what David's talking about, as an incentive, you know, as a motivation to make being, to do something that will last way beyond the span of our lives and so on. It's the, you know, this is a black sheep program. I mean, those of us who feel this way are the people who understand and respond to this list that EJ has
14 items,
has articulated at the beginning of this book. And it certainly is not for everybody.
Okay.
And, you know, EJ's been saying, I'm trying to remember what the context is, but he's certainly saying recently in some of his talks that you're just causing pain and suffering. There's no need to try to wake up robots. You try to wake up those who are completely mechanical. You know, it's not compassionate to try to wake them up, people who aren't oriented towards this.
I was...
Yeah, but you can be mechanical about this, too. Have you noticed that, Harry? I mean, you dealt with people in the work, but there are people in the work that they're doing that with the work mechanical.
Hang on a second, Judy. Hang on. But I wanted to, for some reason, what Ivan was saying, this idea of the quality that is sitting there, reminded me of a talk from 30 years ago, Ivan, and it was on a video called My Dinner with EJ. Do you remember that at all?
Yes.
I barely do. Anyway, it was EJ was in, we were having this conversation, and it was a big, broad conversation about stuff, and we were talking about this moment and this idea of tasting this fine air, this fine, you know, excellence, really. And I remember saying, I attributed it to, this is like finding the fine pastries. And it's, how do I find my way back to this great bakery? And we can, and that's what we're saying here. So we have to be guided back to that. And those that be it for whom it becomes mechanical, so be it. Because our work is on ourselves, and can we find that beauty within us, which is not us in a sense. It's an eternality that is objective. But every once in a while we can taste it like a great poem that just, boom, there it is. So we, our work is this presence of the present in the present. And then couple of paragraphs ahead, he goes, we can learn to be like a lightning rod for fusing these two worlds, making a new world which cannot exist independently. Only in the process of voluntary evolution are we able to make this new world for the benefit of the absolute. Well, that's something that we'll need to unpack in the next few months, though. You know, how does this become a benefit for the absolute? Because that's a core principle that he talks about so often. So there's two things. One is the disincentive of being asleep. But for me, it's the incentive of finding a way to this treasure that is in me, and I've seen it over and over again, and I want it to be more active, and I get it more active when I'm here with my friends doing this kind of work, and it's a worthy form of effort for me. It is worth the price. I guess we're going to need to read that part of the Bible, huh? The pearl.
Which, oh, the pearl without price?
The pearl of great value, yeah.
Well, one has to ask oneself, what do
yes,
you mean by the price or payment? What do you really mean by that? I think that's very important to contemplate. Otherwise,
what does it mean for you?
Well, to me, there's a great deal that's involved in paying. The first thing is letting go of false personality, and actually in self-observing, noticing things and working on them, and that's one thing. And also prayer. Gurdjieff talks about this, you know, that we're responsible for our bloodline. And I mean, this is a very, very deep subject, the subject of payment.
Remember,
we also have to give up our own suffering. Maybe
and
that's
give up our
difficult.
Own suffering. Yes, that's a great point. Thank you. So
woe
be
to those who want to take away my suffering. I'll give you my shirt, but not my suffering.
So what is that about?
Harry, do you remember you had shared in another class years, maybe a few years ago, how you had met this friend of yours from a long time ago at a restaurant, and you had that mustache?
Yes, that was a long time ago, David.
What did he say to you?
Well, you're talking about when I first got involved in the work?
Yeah.
That story? I met him at the Ichthus Coffee House at the Methodist Student Center, and I hadn't seen him in 3 years. He looked and felt and sounded entirely different. And we were sitting there talking in the coffee shop, and he looked over at me and he said, he stood up and pointed his finger at me and said, "Stop twirling your mustache like that." Everybody in the restaurant stopped and looked at us. He says, "If you're going to pull your mustache," and he leaned over with his big handlebar mustache as of his own and twirled it, he said, "Do it with gusto." He said, "You're completely asleep."
Yeah,
and I have never forgotten that. I can play that movie back like it happened yesterday.
Wow.
So that's that's a moment of allowing yourself to the false personality in that particular case to be, you were hit by that guy, and you allowed
it was more like ripped out by the roots.
Well,
it shocked me.
Also
I didn't know what to do. I was very embarrassed.
Well, you were embarrassed, but you also didn't go into, you know, ego, self-justification and all this stuff.
No, I was shocked.
You remember it to this day because it moved your being ahead 1 inch, and that was that's excellent.
Well, there Harry. That's what I was saying. Like, sometimes we need a mirror. We need somebody else. You know, for you might still be twirling your mustache without gusto if it weren't for him.
Actually, I don't twirl my mustache anymore. He ruined that habit.
He ruined your fun.
He ruined it. When I would get nervous, I would pull on my mustache, but not anymore.
So EJ continues, and on the second, on page 6 on the second column, he says, he keeps referring back to this 2-minute exercise of can you hold presence for 2 minutes without breaking. And that concept, of course, runs throughout many, many, many practices in, you know, certainly in Buddhism, Theravadan Buddhism. That was part of what you do, is like, can you hold it without breaking? And if you do, you say, break, and you come back. Break, and you come back. And so this is a first test. So on the one hand, he's saying to us, here's how you do it. Now, here's an objective test. Can you hold presence for that long? And he says, here's how to do it. And then he goes on to say here, it's very interesting, he says, this disarmingly simple experiment of attempted for 2 minutes without one single break, however momentary, can demonstrate to anyone, to his own experience, several important facts. One, that under ordinary conditions, man is asleep. Not just man in general, but you in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Can you sense the sleep that is haunting you as you go through can you feel it on you? Like you're wearing, sometimes it's like I'm wearing another pack, like a big pack I'm carrying through the day.
That's really great to point this out because, and you can feel free to describe this when that comes off, you know, even if it's for 5 seconds, it's like nothing is wrong with anything in the world.
That's right.
And it's almost like, you know, you can look back at the 10 minutes before, and it's like, oh my God, you know. So
concerns and values and beliefs that are
evil. Everything is perfect in that moment.
And it actually is perfect in that moment. Those DJ refers to as moments of freedom. And our work in this manner is stitching those together. We're quilt makers. We bring the quilt and we have a needle and thread and we mold one moment to the next until it has enough weight that we can compare and contrast And these are the development of ways and means to proceed with our particular machine. Each machine is different. And Judy, for instance, has found this thing with a car that works for her. But who's online? Give me some of the names of the people.
Muscle Spark, Maya Satyan, Lost Horizon, Bernola Plant, Antimatter, Pianjo, Lost Horizon.
So these, each individual, all of us that are here, I don't know, what is it, five online, right? The 9 or 10, 12 of us here, each has a particular methodology that we must find out that works for us in taking that pack off every once in a while. Each one is different. Nobody can do it for another. I can't do it for Ivan. Mm-hmm. Ivan can't do it for me.
David, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
I want to think about where we're going, not just where we want to get away from.
Yeah.
And I want to, what would it be like if anybody has any experiences or knows of an author who has talked about something like this? What would it be like to live in complete conscious awareness for an hour?
Well, can you wait until chapter 2? We're going to start that now.
They would be enlightened. I mean,
we can come up with. I'm sure we can come up with literally.
Hang on
a second, guys. The question is there some? You actually asked, and I don't know that this is what you meant. Is there an author who has written and described what it's like to be totally conscious for 1 hour?
That is correct.
Okay. And I'd like to just rephrase it, is what would it be like to be conscious for 1 hour?
What I'm asking.
And in the next chapter, Ije begins to explore that. What we don't understand, even though this is our beginning, where this is beginner's work, this is really, if you can begin to do this kind of material work, that allows you to start the next phase. That's all. So this is beginner's work, but boy, it's necessary.
Yeah, EJ says it's necessary. I'd like to point out that we're jumping over. We seem to be jumping over, Marvin, let's speak, but I just want to point out that we're jumping over this extremely potent list of what are the benefits or the insights that come from dealing with 2 minutes of the awakened state.
I want to go through these, Ivan, because I've got notes on all of them.
Yeah,
go ahead, Marvin. Thank you.
You made the comment that this is beginner's work.
Yeah.
And my response to that is kind of like my impression of Judy's response might have been that there are a lot of people that haven't even done the beginner's work.
There are a lot of people that have not been done the beginner's work. We are, but in a certain way, it hones your skill set to realize that you're doing beginner's work. You know, I did this thing with the art as becoming an archer. When you work in the archery methodology of the, for instance, Zen and the art of archery, you don't even get to shoot at a target for about 5 years. You stand about 2 feet from the target because all you're concentrating on is really your inner sensitivity, and your stance everything has to be utterly perfect. And when you are judged in the 8th, 9th, and 10th realms of that, they don't even look at your posture. They know it has to be right. They're evaluating your inner sense, and are you clean and without intention? How they do that, we don't know, but they do. So what is it like to be like that for 1 hour? Well, sometimes people have experienced being in that space for that long. And one thing that seems to occur, there's the elements of it being a cleansing radiation. Sometimes you're allowed and helped to be in that space for a period of time. And while you're there, let's say you're a visitor there, not one that can generate it, you're in cleansing radiation at that time. And you can feel the sleep being burned off, you know. I baptize not with water, but with fire. Isn't that what he said, Harry, in the New Testament?
It sounds good to me, David. And thank you for that suggestion.
Three, by, you know, it is possible to see and to taste a little what it is to not sleep. That only by special effort is it possible to really awaken. Let me do, the special effort is what we're talking about, right? It's not some other go to Tibet and find that special effort. This is it. It's voluntary effort. And when we voluntarize the effort, when we're cutting metal or something, or we're doing a task, are we doing it with all of our attention? Are we doing it? Because then that comes into the object that you're working with, has that attention. Like these cooks that I get dinner from on Wednesday nights, these are individuals that for 30 years have been practicing holding attention of a particular quality. And when I eat the food, I am getting that attention. Okay? So that's how what you do with it, Harry.
I just wanted something to shoot at.
The urgent necessity, then when you see this sense of sleep and the quality of the diamond ahead of you, you have then you have number four, the urgent necessity for work on self. You don't do it because you're supposed to. That's the Catholic Church methodology. You do it because of self-incentive. You incentivize yourself because you see this is what I should be doing. I recognize the gift I've been given. I recognize this gift. I want to use it. I want to do something with it. The exact method for waking at least a little from the sleep, we understand that now. More or less how much effort it will be required in order to awaken even to this extent from sleep, which is to say the automatic hypnotic fixation on the phenomenal side. We get lost in it. And then seven is a big, important one for me. Why only we are able to work on ourselves, our being, presence, and evolution in and for the work, and why no one else can do this work for us. Does that make sense to you? Do you see that? That you have to do your own work? That nobody can lift that barbell? Can you sense that? Because you're given this machine and this little slice of being. And God said, okay, here's your shot. Go for it.
How could it be otherwise?
How could it be otherwise? It can't be otherwise, Marvette. You're exactly right. It's just that EJ is allowing us to emphasize the point. It is my responsibility to do this work. It's my responsibility. Just the fact, you know, I've been to some of the high-end Gurdjieffian institutes and stuff like that, and they call it, I call what I see there, it's spirituality by appointment. You know, you're there because you're appointed to that chair.
Yeah.
And let all chairs be gone and let everybody sit on their own in the fertile earth upon which we walk. Where were we, Ivan? Eight?
Well, David, you know, to do our own work, we have to give up being a victim.
We give up being a victim, and we can't say, well, gosh, you know,
so-and-so
has this cool car, and they have money and stuff, so that's why they can do it better than me. Well, nothing is required. That's how cool this is.
Well, I'm reminded of the difference in this culture. There's a lot of orientation to competition.
Yeah.
But in the world of being, there is no competition.
There is no competition. We are, the standard is set by our inner self. And when we sit with ourselves and we look in, and we're going to see this in a few minutes, we're going to see some other stuff that he says. Or maybe it is in the next chapter.
Well, David, please don't pass by.
Go ahead.
Number 9, which is that you, let's see, what is it? You can demonstrate to yourself that the work is very real indeed and not just philosophizing. You know, which is to say that you get, by doing this exercise, you know, the 2-minute exercise, you're going to have to get out of your head. If you persist in doing that exercise, you're going to be observing yourself. You're going to see what the situation is.
And some of us have
difficulty of the situation.
Some of us, and you included, Ivan, have been in invocations that are very intense. And in those times, we've been shown, in a sense, that humbles us to the work. We see the vastness of the job in front of us, and we go, we're not quite ready to say yes in the way that some of the people I know have said yes.
Mm-hmm.
But we can no longer say no. That's funny.
You can't go back to Egypt, and you can't get to Canaan.
There you go. We can't go back because we know we can't go back, and we can't quite find Canaan yet. But we know it's out there somewhere, right, Harry?
We sure hope so.
But the work is very real. It becomes a pragmatic thing for us. The flow, 10, is that the flow of time slips away very quickly, and once lost cannot be regained. We know then that there is a time limit for our work, and if we miss this opportunity, we may not be able to make efforts later when we are more fixated and habitual. We will, in short, no longer require intellectual stimulation to convince ourselves of this. Here you go, Judy. The next paragraph on 7. One who has experienced this effort to wake up and can be honest with himself can never again, until he has mastered the invocation of presence, say without shame. That's the one I was looking for. I am here. I am awake. I am conscious. So once you begin this, you can see not only do you taste the nectar of it and its beauty, but you realize how much more I can do. And you begin to see that. And that's okay, because it's a worthy effort. You got to ask yourself, you know, like, what is it worth doing in this lifetime? And for me, this is what's worth doing. It's worth doing this.
Well, you're in company here.
I am in company.
That's the Sangha.
And I have found my friends. That's right.
This is a circle.
Go ahead, Ivan.
David?
Okay, good.
Judy, go ahead, please.
All right. Notice this. 2 minutes with the clock can show him both his fixation on phenomena and reveal the possibility of becoming awake. This is really important because once one is honest with oneself, one can see the sleep. One can start to see the sleep.
Yeah, that's right.
And if one is not honest with oneself, one can do 30 years of meditation. I know people who've been doing meditation for 30 years and doing a lot of other things, and they are the same place they were 30 years ago.
Yeah, so it's both. It's both.
They can't see themselves. They can't. They're unwilling to see themselves.
Okay, let me just say something, Judy, to add to that, which is that It's interesting that years ago, you know, in the earlier days, you know, when I was early in my time at the Institute, I mean, I remember how many people came to EJ of the exactly of people with the experience that you're describing, and a lot of them were from Fourth Way groups,
mm-hmm.
and Fourth Way schools, and they had labored, some of them for 10 years, 20 years, and
uh-huh.
so on. And they came to EJ, and this is what they said, I've done this, and I've done it over and over again, and how come I'm not seeing any results, you know, and he would, and then the other thought that I had that relates to that is that, you know, years ago, I think that you can find it in, I think where it is in the, might be an autobiography of a Sufi, or maybe it's Visions in the, I forget which of EJ's books, but, you know, also people used to ask him, you know, even if they came from, say, you know, from Rashad Field School or from some other school, they would say, you know, EJ, what lineage are you from? You know, what are your credentials and what is your lineage? Like, who is your teacher and so on? And EJ would say to these people, you know, I don't have a certificate. I'm not certified. I don't have a lineage. Here's what I have. The Big 24, I have attention exercises and the invocation of presence. You take these exercises and you try this for 6 or 8 weeks, and then you come back and tell me what results have you gotten from this.
Right.
And that's my lineage. This is my credentials, these practices.
Well,
you know,
this is very true.
And that, to me, that goes along with, you know, when I read something like, you know, it reminds me when he says, the work is very real indeed and not just philosophizing. I mean, I think this is one of EJ's signatures as a teacher.
Yeah.
That it's not like, okay, this is the tripartite, you know, division and here's the Enneagram and it's like this and then we have a lot of formulations and diagrams. It's like, well, how good are you? Take this clock hand. How about 2 minutes sitting in front of a clock and you observe yourself. You see if you cannot have your attention stray, you know, not have
right.
distraction,
yeah.
enter in for 2 minutes and
yeah.
come back and what you've learned from that.
I'd like
you know,
to make a comment on what you're saying because I think this is so important. I think this is so important what you're saying.
Okay.
When Gurdjieff was kind of ready to kick the bucket, he said that I'm leaving you between two stools because he knew what was going to happen with the groups. And he said it's going to make people psychopaths, and that's exactly what it's done. Now, as you know, I've spent 4.5 years writing a reader's guide for Beelzebub's Tales, okay? And I interfaced with a lot of Fourth Way people. I am in no Fourth Way group. I will never be in a Fourth Way group again, a Gurdjieff group, because my experience is exactly what was just described. And, you know, very much in the head, intellectual, and people really who had, they've been doing the same thing for 20, 25 years. They've made no progress because you have to do the practical work. It's where you have to begin.
Yeah, there is no substitute.
There is no substitute. And yes, it's great to understand the Enneagram, and there's a lot of value if you study the direct teachings, whether it's Gurdjieff or Ramana Maharshi. It doesn't matter if it's a master and you study the master.
Sure.
But these people that are teaching are hasnamuses. They are delivering misinformation.
You
and
say
misguiding people. Yeah,
it's
very, very upsetting.
Yeah. Before the class, we were talking about, we just had 5 people from India visiting here, and their guru said, if you're in the United States, you must go see E.J. Gold.
Oh, great.
This is a swami in the middle of God knows where, and these 5 individuals show up. They were, I'd say, in their 50s and 60s. You know, they were more mature individuals, and there was something unusual about them that was, they were all heartfelt.
Mm-hmm.
And we were thinking about, gosh, I was thinking, well, who else does EJ pull in? He pulls in these people from the Spaniards, the Hispanics,
mm-hmm.
love being around him. It's this heart sense that he has that comes out of this humility of working together on your individual work. It emerges from this kind of active surrender that we talk about. Mm-hmm. And your heart, you become heart alive. Heart alive.
Heart alive, yeah. We did that exercise too.
Yes, we did.
I have another story that might be relevant.
That's really great, though, the heart center.
Sure.
Yeah.
Wait, hang on. They were amazed. Here's an interesting thing, Judy, for when you arrive here. They said he was so approachable.
They were amazed.
They were amazed at how approachable he was. Their heart could just be with him.
Well, I would say there's a reciprocality there. I'm amazed at these aren't the first Indian people who visited EJ. I'm amazed whenever the people from those from that culture basically show up, because they're so respectful,
yeah,
and they're so positive, and they're so it's just a different orientation. They have a different cultural orientation towards the teaching. I have another story that may be relevant.
Yeah.
Is there time for a story?
Yeah, I need about 3 minutes just to finish this.
Why don't you do that? Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I'll go ahead and finish.
Yeah. I just have another story in relation to not philosophizing.
I want to hear that story. I'm going to jump over to the last column on page 7, the last three paragraphs quickly. The invocation of presence into the present requires continual special effort, which we've discussed now. For this, we must be convinced of the necessity and feel a definite discontent with ordinary organic existence. 2 minutes of invoked presence can be our aim for now. Later, we will try to expand this to an hour or two, perhaps more. This is not our final goal, but at least one can see how to begin and maybe work more quickly to attain what is in the final analysis only the ordinary state for real three-banged man, who, unlike Homo sapiens, begins life free from the hallucinatory effects of the veil. And when we work in this manner, and then I'll just make quick comment. We work in this manner, this form of effort prepares the worker for what is ahead. We become trained, and the simplest thing is we become trained as how to behave in the space, because we're able to see the space. Okay? Ivan, I'm ready for a story.
Well, after that bit there, I'm trying to remember when I last felt like not a Homo sapien. I could solve all of this in one blow. Now, that's a real thought right there. Okay. Now, again, going back to this issue that Judy was raising and that I was addressing also, in regard to whether you're actually doing the exercise or being in your head, I had I got a real insight into this when some years ago I was visiting in Italy, and I went, we have a friend in Italy, his name is Fabio, he lives near Pisa in the country, and he's been devoted, I mean he's really been a fellow traveler, and he's translated more than one of EJ's books into Italian and so on, and but he took me, we had an invitation to go not so far away to this visit this community, a group of people who were working with Claudio Naranjo, and they were all Italian people. They were, like many of the people who Claudio works with, they were professionals. They were a lot of therapists and social workers and medical people, teachers, generally educated people, professional, a lot of them in the helping professions and so on, a lot of background, a lot of different oriented. I think they were, some of them were steeped in Gestalt therapy, which is, one of Claudio's practices and so on. And so some of these people had visited here at the Institute, and, they had gotten ideas from EJ, and he had made suggestions and sent them materials and so on. And so they had started a practical work on self group. They were working on trying to do what we've done here, or what we do in study groups. So, you know, what David did for years online, which is have the group that meets, starts out with 2 weeks on every in each exercise. You read the exercise 1 week, and then you discuss it, and then everybody goes away, does the exercise. You come back the second week, right, and the group, and you talk about the results, like
That's
what
right.
happened to you in that exercise. So they said, oh, we're going to have our group. We're so glad that you're here from the Institute. We're going to have our group meeting, and we're talking about, I forget which exercise they were on. So after dinner, wonderful big dinner, you know, they treated me to, and it was quite warm. It was actually a wonderful atmosphere. But we sat down, and we all sat on couches. We sat in a circle in their living room, and they said, and then they started to tell me, okay, we're reading this chapter. Well, here's the thing. We've been working on this practical work on self, but what happens is we just can't seem to figure out the exercises, right? And I said, well, what do you mean? So, like, tell me, what have you been doing? And they said, well, we read the chapter, we read the exercise, and then we all go around and we say, like, how we think that the exercise should be done. And then I said, okay, well, that's fine. Then what? He said, well, we can never agree. Then we don't agree on how to do the exercise. So then we come back the next week, and we have to talk about it again, and we still argue, and we say, and sometimes we figure out maybe we can compromise. And then I tried to express to them, I said, well, you know, you need to do this a little differently. I mean, you need to actually, the discussion part is like, okay, everybody can have a different understanding of the exercise, but you have to go away and actually do it. You have to actually do the exercise for a week, and then you come back and you have something to talk about. And somehow I felt like I wasn't quite getting that across to them. In other words, they were actually, I don't know how many weeks or how many chapters they had gone through, but they literally were, because of their own tradition, you know, the kind of work they were doing or whatever tradition that they were familiar with, the lineage, or the work they did with Claudia or something, this idea that we're talking about tonight, I think this really basic foundational idea, they were not getting. They didn't get it. They were being too mental about EJ's text, about his descriptions and his rationales or whatever for the exercise. I mean, it's like saying, you know, walking through doorways. Well, you know, I'm going to remember myself every time. I'm going to say something every time I walk through a doorway. And then they might have been arguing about, well, you know, should I think of it before or just after I walk through the doorway? Or does it have to, should we all say the same thing when we walk through the doorway? Can we agree upon what mantra do you want to use? Well, I want to do this, I want to do that. You know, it's like they never, what was happening with them was that they were so in their heads that they never did the exercise. And that was
they wanted postnatal clarity while still in the womb.
I can't say, you know, it would be a prejudice, I think, a bias to say that all the Europeans have that persuasion, but that was a real eye-opener to me because it was, I felt like, without some direction, they could have used some direction, like a study group leader, or, you know, if they could have done this online with David, for example,
yeah.
You know, they could have used some more direction from us here in our community, because the basic principle that they weren't getting is that you don't have any data. You can't make any progress
without
individual. You're not waking up. You're not going to have an awakening. You're not going to go towards awareness or change of any kind unless you make an effort.
You have to make
an effort. You not talk about how to make an effort. You know, or describe
Excellent
it or
point.
Write about
Very
it.
Good.
Make the
Arthur,
effort.
Thank you. Spot on.
Well, it reminds me of the story that EJ reports about when we first got into Palace and we first had meetings in the chamber, and everybody thought they had to agree to how to move out of the chamber. And I think that was the problem. Instead of like mentally having to come to some agreement, just saying, well, we can experiment and try all these different experiments. And that's, EJ is very much an experimenter, and it's always, you know, people are very free to experiment with what he presents. And
he did, when we did practical work on self, what we would do is what I call, you know, the true seeker method. Is you're five people, there'll be five different methods. Great. Go out and do and come back.
Yeah, that's exactly what I told the Italians. Just, like, hey, if 15 people are going to do this 15 different ways, that's phenomenal. Let's hear the reports. What a great discussion you have.
And then bring your individual report back to the group for group benefit. Dan.
I'm just reminded that this is something that Claude will talk about a lot, which is, let's say if he gives a tabletop demo, he'll emphasize, now I know that you can understand the demo in your mind just by hearing it described, but you aren't going to really get it unless you actually do it. And depending on which kind it is, usually involves some sort of repetition of moving a pen across a paper or putting your hand in water or something that he comes up with to illustrate a point. And the actual experience gives you feedback that you do not get if you just think about it. And that's what a lot of people, when they approach it intellectually, they don't, it's not that just that they don't get it, they probably haven't had the experience of having, even let's say to work with material like wood, where working with the material gives you feedback that you have to adjust your method and so on. It's a very practical thing.
People don't think they have the freedom to do it. But in conclusion, I'd like to say that when we do this together and we're starting to create a little bits of being together, we're starting to form a group together. There's a commonality in that being that we're forming, and we meet each other there with a certain kind of simplicity. So that'll be it for tonight, and we'll look forward to seeing you next Wednesday when we'll begin on Chapter 2. Thank you so much for coming. Good night.
Good night, all.